Good afternoon, this is Marco. You're listening to Astra Talk on CITR 101.9. It is now Tuesday, about maybe 10:30 p.m. and September 27th. That was a day that NASA said it might attempt to launch the Artemis 1, but instead they rolled it back into the building. So it looks like they're, well, doesn't look like, it's absolutely positive there will not be a launch today. So they were talking about a launch for September 27th, and then maybe at the beginning of or the end of September, and then beginning of October. But now there is another news release from NASA, and it says the agency's Artemis 1 stack, including the Space Launch System SLS mega rocket, rolled back to shelter earlier today, September 27th, ahead of a hurricane that may send winds at its Florida launch site, gusting it up to 120 miles an hour or 200 kilometers an hour. So there is definitely not, there definitely was not a launch today, and I guess I expected that. But back when Artemis was trying to launch and two launches were canceled, there was speculation that it could go on at the end of September 2022. But there was still a conflict with the other SpaceX launch that was October. So if they didn't make the launch by the beginning of October, then they'd have to wait their turn for the other launch to take place. And then it could be, the earliest would be something like October 15th. So what happened was that NASA rolled the rocket back into the VAB, the building there, and it is going to be, it says here in the NASA release that it'll be probably a month until Artemis launches. So these things happen, and I know that I've been critical about it, but yes, I am a bit disappointed. The biggest question I had was why, after 1961 was when Kennedy announced the mission to the moon, and they did it before the decade was out, which was the original goal. And they basically, I don't think they started from scratch because they had launches before, but they had to build a powerful enough rocket to escape Earth's gravity. So they did it 50 years ago and quite a few times. And then you'd think with how much technology has improved, especially with computers and stuff, that they've been launching rockets for years now. But this is not going through, and I'm wondering why would it be so complicated when 50 years ago they did it many times. But anyway, there is things like fuel leaks, and sometimes the rockets don't get to the desired temperatures. But anyway, here in space.com, I'm going to read something that says, as Hurricane Ian closes in, NASA weighs option for Artemis 1 moon rocket launch. This is by Elizabeth Howe, published about 9 hours ago. So it's published today, which is the 27th of September. So when I came home, I didn't know if the rocket had launched. I just didn't even look at the news because I basically thought there wasn't much of a chance it was going to launch. And then when I opened up this thing about a couple minutes ago, this thing says, the subtitle for this article is, the agency says an October launch is unlikely, but it won't take anything off the table after the storm comes through. So there's a storm that could erupt the SpaceX launch. As Hurricane Ian closes in, NASA weighs options for Artemis 1 moon rocket launch. And again, the subtitle is, the agency says an October launch is unlikely, but it won't take anything off the table after the storm comes through. So I didn't even get up and think about looking at my favorite space internet sites because I guess I didn't want to jinx it. But anyway, as I repeat, I was thinking this was something that was done 50 years ago. It's not something that they stopped doing. They would launch certain rockets, and I guess the International Space Station, and for example, the Voyagers, which are 45 years on their trip, they launch those and lots of other things to Mars and to other parts of the solar system like Jupiter and Saturn, but this one is not going through. So it says there's only a slight chance that NASA's moon mission will launch in the next month. So basically, it looks like October is not going to, we're not going to see a launch, and the launch might come through in early November. So here's a picture of the building that will now hold the Artemis 1 rocket, and it says Artemis 1 rolls back to the Vehicle Assembly Building, VAB, at NASA's Kennedy Space Center, September 27, 2022, due to Hurricane Ian. And there's an image credit here that shows an image. So the agency's Artemis 1 stack, including the Space Launch System, SLS, mega rocket, rolled back to the shelter earlier today, September 27, ahead of a hurricane that met Mesa winds at the Florida launch site, gusting up to 130 miles per hour or 200 kilometers per hour by Thursday, which is September 29. The expected arrival of Hurricane Ian will require assessment and cleanup ahead of returning the rocket to its launch pad for its scheduled moon mission. Given the severe weather and cleanup from it, plus lingering technical matters, the chances of an October launch are thin, agency officials. When I think about the rocket technology, I remember when Goddard, I guess he's called, maybe I could say grandfather of rocketry. He developed a lot of rockets, and rocket technology advanced quite a bit. And when I looked at the systems itself, at the valves, it's actually quite complicated. But as I said before, we are 50 years after the last, or after the 53 years after the first Apollo launch with big rockets, so it's nothing new. So I'm still wondering how come the technology maybe didn't change much. I'm not sure, but this stuff has been done before. So here is Jim Free, the NASA Associate Administrator for Exploration Systems Development, and what he told reporters at a live conference, press conference on Thursday, September 27th. Quote, I don't think we're going to take anything off the table, end quote. He added the agency is looking at the trade-offs, but launch window options will be limited until November. And there's a related article here. It says NASA rolls Artemis 1 moon rocket off the launch pad to shelter from Hurricane Ian. Okay, so if that's what they must do, and that is the basic option they have on the table, then that's what they would take. So who am I to criticize them? But as I said, I'm not very positive about it anymore, because I was so excited, because I am an astronomy geek, I guess, and it didn't happen. So we are going to be waiting at least another month until maybe we in Canada know this, until maybe the Grey Cup is played, and that is when we are going to maybe see the launch. Okay, here the article continues. Launching the ambitious Artemis 1 moon mission has been difficult already, as the rocket suffered leaks and other fueling issues across a key test in June and launch opportunities in August and September. Officials have had to let several launch windows slide due to technical problems or weather, and Artemis 1 has already made two trips to NASA's Vehicle Assembly Building, VAB, at the Kennedy Space Center for integration or servicing. For integration? That's weird. Okay. NASA's timetable for launching SLS and the Orion spacecraft suggests there are 11 opportunities between October 17th and 31, excluding October 24, 25, 26, and 28. The 2 weeks after that don't offer a launch date. The 2 weeks after that don't offer a launch date that meets the mission's needs, and then the next possible try would be November 12th. So here's a related article, and there's quite a few good related articles on this. NASA calls off Artemis 1 moon mission, moon rocket launch on September 27th due to Tropical Storm Ian. So they're not saying there's technical difficulties, but they are saying that the storm was the thing that interrupted their. They're not saying anything about whether any technical issues cropped up. Believe it or not, I just looked at two videos that were going to show the Artemis 1 rocket, or maybe have somebody speak about it, but all I got was music like that, and there was a lot of shots of hurricanes and things like that. So I'm going to skip this part, and I'm going to go on to the next topic here in this article. Launching the ambitious Artemis 1 moon mission already, as the rocket suffered leaks and other fueling issues across a key test in June and launch opportunities in August and September. Officials have had to let several launch windows slide due to technical problems or weather. An Artemis 1 has already made two trips to NASA's Vehicle Assembly Building at the Kennedy Space Center for integration or servicing. So NASA's timetable for launching SLS and the Orion spacecraft suggests there are 11 opportunities between October 17th and October 31st. If you don't make these, then the next try would be November 12th. NASA Administrator Bill Nelson has suggested NASA is leaning towards the November dates. So says Nelson, and quote, "We know that the earliest it could go is late October, but more than likely we'll go in the window in the middle of November," end quote. Range availability will also depend on launches for other missions and a thumbs up from the U.S. Space Force, which manages the region around the Kennedy Space Center and nearby Cape Canaveral Space Force Base. NASA's Crew 5 astronaut mission for the International Space Station, ISS, is currently slated for October 4th. Whether that date holds is not guaranteed, given Ian, which is the hurricane, though it seems almost certain to launch. NASA may prioritize Crew 5 due to the need for regular crew rotations to the orbiting complex, which is the International Space Station, which are tied in part to experiments and crew health requirements. The ISS is also a busy facility, with other spacecraft constantly visiting with equipment, supplies, and experiments, meaning any scheduled launch must be fit into this network of arrivals and departures. And there's a related article, which I might read later. It's called "What Does Space Do to the Human Body? 29 Studies Investigate the Effects of Exploration." Considerations NASA will weigh include immediate hurricane preparation and cleanup, along with the resulting effects of employee and contractor families. Kennedy Space Center Director Janet Petro said in today's press conference, "Many people will be on leave in the coming days for personal preparations, and non-essential personnel will telework. Post-hurricane, a damage assessment and recovery team will ride around the facility to determine whether it's safe to allow folks to come back on site," Petro said. "Once safe to do so, Artemis 1's flight termination system batteries will be evaluated to assure approval from the Space Force to return to the pad." Free said other life-limited items, roughly 20 or so, such as fuel storage in the service module and some of the payloads within the Orion 1 spacecraft, will also be checked for anything that needs to be adjusted or replaced. Artemis 1, Petro emphasized, is safe within the Vehicle Assembly Building and came under no damage when an unrelated fire broke out briefly within the facility Tuesday at 11:45 Eastern Time. The fire's cause is under investigation, but apparently originated with an electrical panel that was quite far away from the rocket, she said. Earlier, when I was scanning through the site, just a little bit, it showed an Artemis 1, or the Artemis 1 rocket, and being hit by a bolt of lightning. So that is quite frightening, isn't it? So I think I'm going to move on from Artemis, because I was very excited about it. And there's no news here But the only news here is delays. So, and it seemed to me, I guess, when Hubble was launched in its original, about 25 years or so ago, or maybe even 30 years ago, there was this problem with the mirrors. They weren't, I'm not going to say grinded, but ground to the right specification. And some of the senators and some of the people screamed. They said, "You can't do this." And they brought the NASA officials to Congress and grilled them and criticized them profusely. And this is not happening now. But I think it should happen now, because basically this mission is not getting off the launch pad, and delays for, I think it's a technology that is not really new, that was used to send astronauts to the moon maybe 50 years ago or so. The launch, or the space launch system, the rocket is different, but it's got to be a big disappointment. Little issues keep cropping up that this is a new system, and that's probably why. And they're testing out, getting all the kinks out. But it's going to be maybe Christmas that we'll see a launch. Who knows? So anyway, I'm going to move on from Artemis, because it's back in its building. It's not going to be until probably November that it's launched. And even if it goes ahead as planned in November and they launch it, it's possible that this these problems keep cropping up. So when they want to send astronauts in a few years, I'm not confident of the dates that they're setting. And I think the first Artemis 2 is when they will send astronauts to orbit the moon, but not to actually go down to the moon. So Artemis 3 could be 2025. It could be much delayed now, but it's possible that we won't see people on the moon till 2030. And maybe people don't care about that. Some other people are saying, "Oh, well, big deal." Yeah, and I can see why they're saying that, but I am really a big fan of the of NASA. So, and when I come back, I'm going to talk about what I saw on NASA TV last night. And it's not like I turned to NASA TV on purpose to find a certain program that I wanted to see. I just basically seemed to, at a whim, said, "Okay, let's see what's on NASA TV." So that's what I did last night, and I was partly playing video games, so I didn't really pay attention as much as I maybe could have, but it was really interesting. So what they were talking about was the International Space Station and how it's being used, not just for research, but for other purposes. So I'll get back to that after my break. So this is Marco. You're listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9.
Hey there.
Barev.
We're the Armenian Students Association, and we're here to bring together everyone,
Armenians and non-Armenians,
who are interested in learning about the Armenian culture here at UBC.
Find us on Facebook at ASAUBC to stay up to date. We look forward to seeing you at our future events.
So welcome back. This is Marco. You're listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9. And there are a couple of topics I'm going to talk about. One of them is the DART, where they're going to, where they did, they smashed into the asteroid. And I think what happened is the astronomers stunned as binary asteroid Didymos Dimorphos brightens after DART space impact. So we're going to talk about that. But first, I wanted to talk about the program I saw last night on NASA TV, and I could try to find it again because they replay some of these programs. But they're talking about the International Space Station, and there are, I think, 300 plus experiments going on at one time on the International Space Station, and I was quite surprised how big it is. It's a big, bigger than a, than I think 3 football fields or maybe 1 football field, but anyway, it's quite big, and it's been in constant orbit for quite a few years. And not only does it have all these experiments, but there was an explanation last night on the show how the International Space Station is being used to help humanity at this time. One of the ways is that I have talked about when there was fires in Malaysia, a lot of fires in Australia, when the ice melts in the polar caps, and a lot of other things. NASA satellites do a great job of providing that bird's eye view and providing data that can be used right away to mitigate these disasters or to try to find patterns that they can find solutions to some things. So they had, for example, a African government official on the TV speaking about certain disasters that had happened in his country, and how the International Space Station, not the satellites, he was praising the International Space Station, how they gave their government real-time data on these disasters to mitigate the disasters. So there's very useful stuff. And there's also, for example, in the United States, one of the small towns there, their lake that they got their water from, or they were getting their water from, there was algae and other stuff building up and things like that, and people got very sick. So they used the International Space Station to get a bird's eye view of this, and they found a solution to it. So these are two examples they talked about, and they talked about many examples last night. But I was, in a way, a bit surprised that the International Space Station did all these things, because I thought all the International Space Station was like a laboratory to do experiments. But it can do real-time service to humanity all over the globe, and that's what they're saying that they're doing for many countries, and NASA's working together with these companies, so there is a real humanitarian benefit from having the International Space Station up there. And what I really like about one of the experience I was talking about, when they were making mirrors in space in microgravity or in zero gravity, these mirrors did not need to be grinded or polished. Just the environment of the microgravity made a lens that was as smooth as you can imagine, as perfect as you can imagine, and there was no grinding, no all these extra expenses. So as they said on that particular topic, they said, we let the physics do the work for us. So they had discovered how to use microgravity and use the physics to invent this new lens. I don't know if you call it invent, but have processed this new lens. So that's why I'm thinking with the rocket launches, it seems like a very old technology. And as we see now, there's delay after delay after delay. And the Artemis 1 mission, NASA keeps saying, is for preparation for the eventual trip to Mars. But you're going to expend a lot of fuel getting to Mars. And then I do understand that the Martian surface has a lot less gravity and the atmosphere is quite thin. So the escape velocity needed to get out of the Martian grip of Mars would be a lot less. But still, as Elon Musk said, reusable rockets are really needed for a trip to Mars. And it's possible Elon Musk could get there way before NASA does. But this does seem like almost like an old Stone Age technology of using brute force to launch off a launch pad. So basically, it's Newton's second law. The rocket blasts off, it pushes against the Earth, and then the Earth pushes back, and that's how the rocket lifts, apparently. So this seems like raw power, brute force, just muscle to get us off the Earth. Is there not something like this experiment in microgravity that created these lenses that are better than the lenses that could be made on Earth. And there's so many other experiments, like the one about fire, seeing how fire behaves in microgravity, and the flame burns at a much cooler temperature. So there's the spin-off there of trying to get the same kind of effect on Earth, where fuel can burn at a much lower temperature and save a lot of fuel in the process. So then I was so intrigued by all these things, and hopefully someone can discover a way to go to all these places, because it's possible that's what is needed. So when Einstein revolutionized physics, he did these mind experiments and came up with relativity. And maybe that's what's needed for this space launch thing, or getting rockets into outer space for trips to the moon or trips to Mars. And I'm just thinking, this is quite disappointing with this Artemis, how it's failed its first test, and I think it's failed miserably. And what can you say about the weather? That's what NASA gave as a reason today, but it's possible, let's say if the weather was perfect, it's possible the launch would not have happened till November anyway, because they're not getting the thing to operate as it should. So I will leave this Artemis thing and go to this topic about the International Space Station. So I'm not sure how long the International Space Station has been up orbiting Earth, but it's been quite a bit of time. And I could report next time, I could look for the exact things that the International Space Station did for these African countries trying to mitigate disasters, and for other things where, for example, in Ohio, they could take pictures of this lake, because the International Space Station, the astronauts face many sunsets a day because they go around the Earth so many times, and from their vantage point up there, they can see all these things. And not just, I guess they have telescopes up there, so just like satellites can look down. And I will try to look at that show again. But the great thing about this is I found out that not only was the International Space Station has hundreds of experiments, they have this capability to actually provide assistance to governments, countries, all countries. And it wasn't just the United States. They gave examples of Africa and South America and Central America and United States and probably Canada too, that the International Space Station was providing all these benefits. So it wasn't just research, which I thought the International Space Station only did, but it did other things. So I was quite impressed by that, and I'll look at that program. But now what I'm going to also do is talk about the DART mission. So the DART mission, where the, I'll tell you what the acronym means, ladies. I think it means D is maybe direct, asteroid. No, I'm not going to tell you what it means. But anyway, there's that acronym. NASA's DART asteroid impact won't make Dimorphos hit Earth, but here's what would happen if it did. Okay, so I am going to read something about the... Behold, the first images of DART's wild asteroid crash. And it also says, DART truly made a mess last night, which is very interesting. So anyway, this article is called Behold, the first images of DART's wild asteroid crash, with an exclamation mark. So it must have been quite dramatic. And it has pictures here. It's by Megan Bartels, published about 13 hours ago, since it's almost Wednesday, September 28th, then I assume this article was published on the 27th. And again, the article is called Behold the First Images of DART's Wild Asteroid Crash. And it said, that's a lot of debris. So here's a real picture of it. Didymos and Dimorphos shortly after DART's impact on September 26, 2022, as seen by the UCIA Cube spacecraft's LUKE camera. So we'll call the camera Luke. On Tuesday, September 27th, the Italian Space Agency released its first images from the Tiny Light Italian CubeSat for imaging of asteroids. So that's LICA Cube spacecraft, which had reached Earth about 3 hours after NASA's double asteroid redirection test. DART spacecraft. Oh, so the DART, D stands for double, because there is two asteroids. One is orbiting the other. And you could probably say they're orbiting each other. But anyway, it successfully impacted the asteroid Dimorphos about 7 million miles or 11 million kilometers away from Earth. The images include a before and after comparison of the Didymos asteroid system, as well as photos of bright debris surrounding Dimorphos. Both cameras aboard LICA CIA Cube are represented. So says Elisabetta Dotto, a science team leader at the Istituto Nazionale di Astrofisica, INAF, and you can guess that's on Italy. That's in Italy, and this is what she said at a press conference. Quote, "We're really proud." Okay, that needed a quote, but anyway, these images are crucial to helping scientists understand the structure and composition of Dimorphos, Dotto explained. She said that while these photos are only the first couple to be released, the cube images the team will be releasing over the coming days are also promising. In the final image shared today, Dimorphos is surrounded by bright hazy debris, which is Dimorphos is completely covered really by this emission of dust and detritus produced by the impact. Before impact, scientists weren't sure how the asteroid would respond to the collision. So I thought usually the surface of an asteroid or moon, whatever, is called regolith, but here they call this detritus. A new word. Wow. NASA's DART mission slammed into Dimorphos, a smaller space rock circling a larger asteroid called Didymos, to test a potential way of adjusting the orbit of an asteroid that threatens Earth, should scientists ever detect such an object. Now, astronomers are keeping a close eye on the Didymos system, ready to measure just how much Dimorphos' orbit sped up. That's the data NASA needs to determine how successful DART was, but there's no reason to stop the observations there. Mission personnel also recruited 3 spacecraft and countless ground-based observatories to watch the impact and its aftermath. And I was watching another space show the other day on NASA TV, which is really good. Should try to get it. They were talking about the Atacama Desert and the telescopes up there, or the observatories up there. And I say up there because it's high in the mountain. And the Earth's atmosphere is, I guess, famous for blocking out things that certain telescopes cannot see through. So up there, the air is so thin that some of the telescopes, observatories, don't have to worry about that. So they have some of the greatest telescopes up there, and I would love to go up there. But anyway, then of course there's the Laika cube, the tiny spacecraft. It's a ride with DART, which deployed the CubeSat on September 11th. Laika cube proceeded to test its 2 cameras on targets, including Earth and the Pleiades star cluster. The Laika cube explorer imaging for asteroids, which is LEIA camera, can photograph with higher resolution, but only captures images in black and white, whereas Laika cube unit key explorer, which is Luke, LUKE, carries red, green, blue color red, green, blue color filters and can observe a wider field of view. So here is the images here. They look really cool. The image says Didymos and Dimorphos shortly after DART's impact as seen by Leica Cube on September 26, 2022. On Monday, the tiny observer was ready to go, hanging back at a safe distance as DART sped in, then flying past the impact site about 3 minutes later, snapping photos all the way. Leica Cube also imaged the far side of Dimorphos opposite DART's crash site. Now, Leica Cube is on its way as Italy's first deep space mission, cruising through deep space as it slowly beams images back to Earth. And I could see why they said they're proud, because this is Italy's first mission. And congratulations to Italy. Now, here's another link here. It says related stories. It said after DART's incredible asteroid impact, the science is only beginning, by Ken Cooper, published about 20 hours ago. So it was published today, the 27th. And here's a nice photo of, so let's give that article again. After DART's incredible asteroid impact, the science is only beginning. This is on space.com. And it shows one of the asteroid. It says DART's view of Dimorphos less than 2 minutes before impact on September 26, 2022. NASA's DART mission has successfully slammed into Dimorphos, obliterating the spacecraft and giving the asteroid an almighty whack that scientists hope has altered its orbit around its larger companion. Oh, so I didn't know that. They were hitting the smaller one. And proven that we have the ability to deflect incoming hazardous asteroids. Mission over? Not by a long shot. Now that DART has done its job and crashed into its asteroid target, astronomers hope to understand how much the impact deflected Dimorphos by, as well as learning more about Dimorphos' interior structure and composition to give a complex picture of what it takes to move an asteroid. So let me pause for a second. There was, as we know, last year there was the fabulous pictures from Mars and how a helicopter was deployed on Mars for the first time. Then there was the 45-year anniversary of Voyager. And a few years ago, there was the mission to Saturn. And then there's the Juno mission to Jupiter. And there have been so many successes for NASA, and the DART is another success. So NASA has been doing great work out there. Now that DART has done its job and crashed into its asteroid target, astronomers hope to understand how much the impact deflected Dimorphos by. Oh, I just read that. As well as learning more about Dimorphos' interior structure and composition to give a complete picture of what it takes to move an asteroid. So says Patrick Michel, planetary scientist at CNRS, the French National Center for Scientific Research, and quote, "We are just at the beginning." I read all that and made a quote, and now end quote, and it just said, "We are just at the beginning." I don't know if that needed a quote, but anyway. Michel is the principal investigator of the European Space Agency's Hera mission, which will launch in 2024 and reach Dimorphos and the larger asteroid it orbits, Didymos, in 2026, to view the aftermath of DART's sacrifice. So here's a related article, 8 Ways to Stop an Asteroid, Nuclear Weapons, Paint, and Bruce Willis. So let's see, I'm going to try to play a video now on Dimorphos and Didymos and this DART mission, and hopefully it will.
The team is standing just recognizing this moment, years in the making. It is really nice to see them relax a little bit, get off from those computers that they've been glued to, and just appreciate this moment that's coming.
Yeah, and they've earned this. It's just great to see them there. This is so cool.
Lori, we hit another major milestone. We are now 2 minutes and a half from impact and SmartNav has stopped maneuvering the spacecraft. DART is now coasting toward Dimorphos, and we hope into the history books.
Absolutely. This will be, I'm sure you've heard it many times tonight, humanity's first ever attempt at trying to move another celestial body, and also our first attempt ever to execute a mission in sole purpose of planetary defense. So what an exciting time. Yeah, and I'm starting to see Dimorphos start to come into view there. You can see it starting to take shape. I'm starting to see individual boulders on Didymos. Unbelievable clarity of images there.
We're coasting on in. Our projected miss distance is going to be about 17 meters.
All right.
All eyes on this event. Space telescopes, ground telescopes from every continent on Earth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. 2 minutes out. Does not look like one single rock to me.
Oh, boy, we're getting close.
14,000 miles per hour, Lori.
14,000 miles per hour. And remember, 55 minutes ago, we couldn't even resolve this object in space. And now we are, you can see us zeroing in right on target.
And we're now dropping the clock, and we'll go by loss of signal to confirm impact.
Right. Yes. Imagine we'll get that loss of signal, and then we'll hear from Lena Adams again, letting us know that we've been
we'll
successful.
Know. I feel like that'll be a crystal clear signal.
I think so. I think we're starting to see more more resolution. In fact, look at that. Didymos has even gone out of the view. We're now just seeing Dimorphos.
This is remarkable stuff.
Oh my goodness, look at that.
Looks like control system settling down. Angular rates look really good. I think we're going to get the investigation team some good pictures.
Wow.
No, come on. We can do better than that.
Starting to see those individual boulders there. You can see shadows
of
various rocks on the surface.
Almost 30 seconds to impact. It's amazing, guys. Oh, my goodness. Look at that. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Looks to me like we're headed straight in.
So this is from a cam on the spacecraft, I believe.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Oh my goodness, 8,
yeah.
7,
oh,
6,
wow.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Oh my gosh. Oh wow.
Awaiting visual confirmation.
All right. Let's see. We got it? Waiting.
And we have humanity in the name of planetary defense.
Woo. Fantastic. Oh, fantastic. Oh.
What a moment. Very few words can really capture this moment. This is beautiful to watch.
It is not showing the actual impact. They had another spacecraft up there, but they're not showing the impact yet.
What a team. What a team, and what an accomplishment.
Team. A few weeks ago, they had their last dress rehearsal. They were getting emotional at the dress rehearsal, and they're like, this is crazy. We're getting emotional. This is not the real thing. I can only imagine what they are feeling right now.
So, I guess this confirms that we are a spacefaring race. So, this was the first time something was done in the name of planetary. So there's one quote here, I'll read it. Michelle said, in quote, "We recognized early in our discussion about the mission that we needed the ability to quickly measure the deflection from the ground," end quote. These telescopes will be watching for the change in Dimorphos' orbit. Other than the Arecibo Observatory's radar observations in 2003 that were made when Didymos and Dimorphos came within 4.8 million miles, or 7.8 million kilometers of Earth, our telescopes cannot resolve Didymos and Dimorphos as individual objects. That challenge comes because the space rocks are so small, 2600 and 660 feet, or 780 and 170 meters respectively, so close to one another, separated by about 0.6 miles or 1 kilometer at least before the impact, and so far away, 6.6 million miles or 10.6 million kilometers on October 4th. So here it shows all the observatories on Earth. There's a nice map here that shows the observatories on Earth that watch this impact. But together, the two space rocks form what astronomers refer to as an eclipsing binary. When one passes in front of the other, we see their combined light diminish, and the period of their brightness change tells us that the time it takes for Dimorphos to orbit around Didymos. Before the impact, Dimorphos orbited Didymos at only 19 centimeters per second, or 7.5 inches per second. So when we shoot Dimorphos with a DART spacecraft moving at 6 kilometers per second, the deflection will be instantaneous. The aim of DART's impact is to have nudged Dimorphos enough for its orbital period to have shortened by at least 73 seconds and possibly more. That might not sound like much, considering that before the encounter with DART, Dimorphos orbited Didymos once every 11 hours and 55 minutes. But over multiple orbits, that 73-second or more difference will build up, affecting the timing of the eclipses as seen from Earth. So says Michelle, and quote, Lycia Cube will tell us about the ejecta produced first, and then the ground-based observations will tell us the difference in the orbital period of Dimorphos around Didymos before and after the impact, end quote. However, with DART demolished, Lycia Cube in the distance, and telescopes here at home too far away to see much beyond the change in orbit, there will be still many questions unanswered. Key to understanding the success of the impact and how we can apply its lessons to deflecting other asteroids is how much momentum DART impacted on Dimorphos. Lycia Cube and Hera nailed down the precise mass of Dimorphos, but science estimate it is at 11 billion pounds, or 5 billion kilograms, which means that this giant lump of rocks is carrying a lot of inertia despite its slow orbit. The momentum of the impact worked against this inertia. However, it may be that not all of the momentum transferred into Dimorphos' orbital trajectory. We may get some components of the momentum going into Dimorphos' liberation. Dimorphos is tidally locked to Didymos, much like the Moon is tidally locked to Earth, and therefore always shows the same face to us. However, because the Moon orbits Earth on an elliptical and inclined orbit rather than a circular orbit, the Moon appears to rock in the sky over the course of a month. This is what astronomers call libration. Models suggest that the impact could have sent Dimorphos into a chaotic tumble, destabilizing its rotation and leading to the libration also becoming chaotic. Another possibility is that some of the debris from the impact could end up on Didymos. The larger asteroid spins quite quickly, once every 2.26 hours, which is fast enough to be on the margin of breaking itself apart. Cool stuff. Therefore, the asteroid is expected to be an agglomeration of interplanetary rubble, loosely held together by gravity. The accretion of debris from the impact would subtly alter Didymos' shape and hence its rotation. This is all important because scientists need to model the impact and its consequences accurately if they hope to then apply this kinetic impactor approach to other asteroids. When Hera arrives in 4 years' time, it will be able to answer these questions. Furthermore, it will measure the diameter and depth of the crater, details that will also inform the accuracy of the science models. So says Lynn Lee Johnson, the director of NASA's Planetary Defense Coordination Office, and quote, Hera will provide a much more complete and precise measurement of what occurred, particularly the exact composition, mass, and strengths of these two objects. The Hera mission will do that for us in addition to doing pure and additional science, since every one of these asteroids is going to be a little bit different, and it will add to our understanding of their overall characteristics. So, I'm going to go for a break now. When I come back, I'll talk more astronomy on CITR 101.9.
Are you looking for a volunteer opportunity that fits your schedule? Being a big sister takes less time than you think, and you can choose the volunteer opportunity that fits your life. Spend just 1 hour a week as a study buddy, tutor, or 2 hours a week as a big sister. Check out the various mentoring programs at Big Sisters of BC Lower Mainland and find a volunteer position and a little sister that will suit you to a T. Visit bigsisters.bc.ca for more information today.
So welcome back. Here's a related link. It says James Webb and the Hubble Space Telescopes will try to watch DART asteroid impact. This September 27th smash-up will be quite the event. When NASA's DART mission slams itself into an asteroid called Dimorphos next week, three different science spacecraft will be trying to watch the action. The Double Asteroid Redirection Test, DART, mission is designed to test a planetary defense technique that could be put to use if humans discover a large asteroid on a collision course with Earth. The spacecraft carried with it a tiny CubeSat to document its dramatic end, but three other eyes in the sky will also attempt to watch the impact: James Webb, Hubble, and another NASA asteroid mission, Lucy. So says Nancy Shabbat, a planetary scientist at Johns Hopkins University Applied Physics Lab. Quote, "This is a unique opportunity and a unique moment to take all the resources that we possibly can to maximize what we've learned." DART launched in November 2021, bound for a binary asteroid system anchored by the larger Didymos, with a moonlet called Dimorphos that orbits every 11 hours and 55 minutes. On September 27th, DART will test a technique called kinetic impact, a fancy term for slamming something large enough and fast enough into an asteroid to nudge its orbit. Scientists want to observe the known impact event to understand how a future planetary defense mission might unfold should humans want to deflect an asteroid headed towards colliding with Earth. So this test was planned, and we knew the orbit or the direction that Didymos and Dimorphos was traveling. But what if all of a sudden NASA's presented with this problem? In 2 days, an asteroid is going to hit us. What do they do? They might have some plans in for that, and it might involve nuclear weapons, but that could happen. Mission personnel hope to see images of the impact site just 3 minutes after launch, thanks to the tiny CubeSat, Lykia Cube, that DART deployed earlier this month. The European Space Agency will also send a separate mission, Hera, to study the site in detail beginning in late 2026. But a live view of the moment of impact itself from a telescope in space, unhindered by the blur of Earth's atmosphere, would certainly be a nice bonus. So NASA will turn the veteran Hubble and James Webb telescope, which just began operations this summer, to try to catch DART's impact, which will occur at 7:14 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. So if you go to any website now to do with space, like space.com, lifescience.com, or nasa.gov, you'll see pictures. How good these space observations turn out to be is still unknown. So says Shabbat, end quote. Let me just stress here, this is not what James Webb Space Telescope is designed to do. This is a challenging measurement for them. They will also be looking. We'll see what we got, end quote. James Webb faces a second challenge, which is that the telescope has to regularly check in on guide stars and readjust, which means its observations might begin a few minutes after impact. Tom Startler, DART program scientist, said during a news conference, "Hubble has its own constraints. Since the telescope will be on the wrong side of Earth at the moment of impact, but it will begin observations about 15 minutes after impact. Hubble won't actually catch the exact moment of impact, but that's okay because we don't really expect anything to be really observable from the exact moment of impact. Along with the two space telescopes, NASA has also arranged for instruments aboard the Lucy mission to observe the impact. Lucy launched in October 2021 to study asteroids that orbit the Sun at the same distance as Jupiter, and that scientists think hold clues about the earliest days of the solar system history. But for now, Lucy is still near Earth, since it must conduct a flyby next month to set its trajectory out to its target, so it might be able to catch the impact. Although DART personnel only need to measure the change in Dimorphos' orbit to determine whether the mission was a success, scientists are hoping to learn more about countless other characteristics of the moonlet, including its rotation and structure. So I don't want to take a dig at the Artemis 1 mission, but it's nice to see that this launch and all these years of planning. And what I did see about the DART mission, they showed, I guess it's called Mission Control, where all the engineers and astronomers are working, and then when they conclude their mission, they jump up and down and they're so happy. And I guess a lot of that jumping up and down is finally a release of the stress that builds up when you're working on a mission like this, and when you're working countless hours. And just like they said with Artemis 1, it's a very stressful time when they're launching these missions, and when it doesn't launch, when it doesn't actually take off, there's no release of stress. You even get more stress. So they do give the engineers and astronomers time off, a day off after these Artemis 1 launches. Or when they did not launch, they give them a bit of time off. They learned that from previous missions. And I could just imagine the glee when their mission is successful. But then I could also imagine the disappointment and the letdown, and how stress has built up when things don't go as well as you think. But what I did do was follow, for example, Voyager. I followed that for a long time, and I couldn't wait for Voyager to leave the solar system, and they both eventually did. And I think the other, within 10 years, was when the first Voyager left. But there was a lot of so many things that they found out. Like, for example, when they went to Jupiter, they saw the moon Io. They were thrilled and stunned to see hundreds of volcanoes or lava shoots up in the sky from volcanoes erupting on Io. And there's so many other things. And what was one of the things that impressed me the most is when scientists make predictions and they have theories. And for example, when they finally do leave the solar system, and I think it's called the heliosheath, or there's quite a few layers there that they have to go through before they get into interstellar space. So a lot of the things that really impressed me was how scientists would get it right. They would create these theories, or not create, they use all the data they have at hand and their theories, and they say, well, this is what we think, what will happen. And when the Voyager finally reaches the edge of the solar system and goes into interstellar space, so they have to fashion these instruments, these cameras, these sensors, to actually catch or to confirm that what they propose, what they predicted, is actually true. So they have to actually know what they're doing before they go up there, and when they haven't been up there. So, for example, I don't know how wide the solar system is, but it's quite big, and it's just not across, not a simple walk across the street. So when they got there, it was confirmed. A lot of the theories were confirmed, I think, most of them. And just like Kip Thorne said, when the LIGO system actually caught the neutron stars colliding, and they had to think of the specs beforehand, and when the collision actually happened, their theories were confirmed, and the specs they set up for all the instruments were actually the correct specs. So, for example, when the Voyagers went into interstellar space, they're going to measure the surroundings, and from these measurements, they can confirm whether or not they are in interstellar space or not, and if they've actually left the solar system, and what's the heliosphere, and the heliosphere is the big sphere, but stuff like the heliosheath, what is it composed of, and what does the solar wind do at that distance from the sun? And a lot of their theories were confirmed, and the specs on the instruments and the cameras and all the sensors and everything that they sent up there actually measured what they thought was going to happen, and that to me is quite amazing. So we can hope that I guess that's why I keep talking about it, I shouldn't, but the Artemis 1 moon mission, they've been to space before on these big rockets, and it could be they're just getting out the kinks of this new system, this new space launch system, and I hope that's what it is. But it's quite disappointing, just like people were disappointed when Hubble didn't work at first. And there were a lot of screams, and I don't hear any screams now. So thank you for listening. This has been Marco. You have been listening to Astro Talk for the last show of September. We'll talk to you again in October. Good night.